Nora Speaks is a weekly podcast that tugs at the soul and consciousness of the Black community. With show topics such as youth empowerment, education, women's impact, and civic engagement, Nora Speaks challenges the listener to not only join the movement, but be the movement. On the show, you'll learn from insightful guests who have demonstrated capacity in these fields and more, and I'm your host, Nora Muhammad. Welcome to the show. Welcome to another episode of the Nora Speaks podcast. I am your host, Nora Muhammad, and welcome to episode 130. It's always a privilege to have the opportunity to share a few words with you each week. And I'm just grateful and thankful for this podcast. And I'm grateful and thankful to you who are my listeners for sharing the podcast, for your comments, for your emails, for your social media support. I really do appreciate it. And I'm glad to know that this podcast is having the intended effect. You know, I want to spark conversation. I want to spark thought, and I want to share information. And I'm grateful to have this platform to do just that. And so episode 130, I was thinking of what I would title this episode. And I've decided to title this episode, Organizing Takes Endurance. I even considered the title of, oh, so you want to organize with Black people. But I decided on a better title, Organizing Takes Endurance. So, you know, I'm thinking about our people in, especially right now with so much going on with social justice efforts. This is an election year, a presidential election year. So there's a lot of politics happening, you know, folks trying to rally people to register to vote, to get out the vote. And, you know, organizing is in everything that we do. It's in education, it's in business, it's in our families, it's in government. And if and when we are organizing with Black people, especially if you're going to be the one that's leading the organizing efforts, there are particular challenges that lay ahead. And we have to have endurance so that we can withstand the challenges that are going to be laying ahead for us. And, you know, for Black people, we have a particular set of a unique set of challenges based on a unique history that we have. And so if you've ever been in an organization, if you've ever led an organization, been an officer, held a title or a role greater than just a member, or if you were a member, then you've seen some of what I'm going to describe next in organizing, especially with Black people. And I'll just say, organizing with people in general has its challenges, but with Black people, we have a particular set of challenges. And so you may have come across the following. One, non-committal behavior. You know, folks who are withholding of contributions, they're not making sacrifices, they're not making efforts, they don't promote the organization, they don't talk about it. They're not committed to it, at least not in any way by their actions, but they still want the benefits of the organization, right? So I'm sure you've seen that. Negative self-talk or negative talk. The ones who start every sentence with "but," you know, as the lead or the head is talking about efforts or projects, you have that person or those people who are somewhat pessimistic, and they'll start a sentence with "but," you know, kind of pointing out all of the problems or all of the challenges that could lay ahead. They don't really have the vision of someone who would be in leadership. And that's why taking the lead requires a certain character. It requires a certain discipline. And it requires the lead or the leadership to have a vision, and generally greater than the vision of the members, because the members have to be led by those who are in leadership. So you have those who engage in the non-committal behavior, you have the negative talk, you have the complainers, you have those folks who find fault in everything. They find fault in the letterhead, they find fault in the leadership, they find fault in the members, they find fault in the planning, in the strategies, in the missions, in the building, in the colors, in the themes, in the slogans. You know, those folks that always are finding something to complain about. You also have the big talkers but little doers, the ones who tell everybody what they need to do, or they may not just tell everybody what they need to do. They may also talk about what they can do, and they talk and they have grand and grandiose ideas, but they do very little. The big talkers and the little doers. And then with organizations, there's misunderstandings. There's challenges in communication. There are folks who may not read memos, who aren't reading the emails, who aren't staying up to date. And also, you know, perception differences can account for many misunderstandings. I mean, how many of you have received a text or sent a text and it was completely misconstrued than what you really meant, but intonation can be hard to read over text? And not just over text, but sometimes even having a face-to-face conversation, someone can misread something that you're saying or misunderstand your intentions. So misunderstandings come along when you're in organizations. There's also ignorance and inexperience. And by ignorance, I mean just someone who just lacks knowledge, somebody who's a novice to the field, to the work, to the industry, someone who just doesn't have a great deal of history or practice in whatever it is that the organization is doing. But they, you know, like to insert their ideas and they want action on their ideas, but because they are limited in their knowledge and in their experience, then they don't see the bigger picture. They don't understand consequences, ramifications, and so that's why that person in leadership is such a key figure, because that person should be able to see more based on the experience that that person has. That person should be able to anticipate, you know, the what comes next. That person should be able to accurately predict consequences of decisions. And, you know, sometimes the rank and file members just may not have that same perspective. And not because there's anything wrong with them, but just because that might not be their experience that they have. And so, you know, when you're dealing with organizations and you know, working with people, you're going to have people who talk out of ignorance, who talk or act out of inexperience. And sometimes, you know, you pull them to the side and you have a one-on-one conversation with them. You let them know what they said or what they did, you know, can be harmful to the work of the organization, to the work and to the mission, you know, and hopefully that person is open to hear that feedback. And then with organizations, you have those quitters, the people who come on strong, they're excited, they're fired up, they're ready to go, but then they fizzle out. They themselves don't have endurance. But sometimes quitters quit, but still stay around. Have you seen that? When you're working with a group of people, they're not doing anything. They refuse to do anything more than they've already done. Usually they haven't done much, but they stay around. And often when they are staying around, they're sowing seeds of dissension and discord, or they want to stay around because they want to watch the fall. of the leadership. They want to watch the fall of the organization. And it's unfortunate, but this is what you get, you know, when you're organizing with people. And as I said, organizing with any group of people has its challenges, but with Black people, we have some really unique and special challenges. And so we have to know that organizing is incremental. Even though the leadership may have a vision, the members may not share that vision. The members might not have the same confidence that the leader does, or that the leadership, the leading body, the organizing body does. They just might not be there yet. So I'll say this about why organizing with Black people has such challenges. For one, since our experience and journey on this continent, we have exclusively been moved at the direction of others and for the aims and purposes of others, and never our own. That's been our experience. For us, Black people in America, specifically descendants of slaves, collectively, it is a very new concept for us to organize without having white authority as our standard or as our crutch. You know, white people have led us in this country. They guide us. They create the policies. They create the laws, and they create our purposes. They give us our own aims. And so we've been following them, you know, since we've been in this country, and we've been following their leadership, their collective leadership. And we have not had an opportunity to follow our own. And so this is something that can be very new. It could be very challenging for us to see beyond what our former slave masters wanted and had for us, and then to see what we should and want for ourselves. And so we have barriers there, justifiably so, understandably so. And so that is one of the reasons why we have such challenges. And so there's also, because of our history and trauma in this country, we have a great deal of self-hatred and jealousy. We have inferior thinking, and it's pervasive in the Black community. And, you know, self-hatred and jealousy, that comes from a lack of self-confidence. It comes from a lack of love. And all of this was destroyed, obliterated in this experience that we've had in America. And I know some people, you know, say, oh, you know, Black people are always blaming slavery, and not just other non-Black people, but also Black people say, oh, we're always blaming slavery. Well, I'm not blaming anything. I am connecting us to, in this conversation, I'm connecting us to the experience that created this pervasive jealousy, inferiority, and self-hatred. It didn't come out of a vacuum. It came from an experience. And more, you know, social scientists are studying the effects of trauma, and how trauma not just lives in the body, but trauma can be physiologically experienced from one generation to the next. You know, when a mother is dealing with trauma, that child that she's bearing is going to have the physical impacts of the mother's trauma. And, you know, this is a conversation that I talked about in a previous episode, and I talked about stress and trauma and things like that, and how it impacts the body physiologically. And it also impacts the child that the mother is bringing to birth. So in this country, we have generational trauma, and the trauma has destroyed, obliterated our self-confidence, obliterated our self-love. And it has given us, obviously, inferiority. And we know that, you know, part of the indoctrination of us in this country to participate in slavery was a white supremacist ideology. It was a Eurocentric ideology. And what were they supposed to give us? An Afrocentric ideology and an Afrocentric mindset to enslave us? No, they had to create a mindset that could keep and maintain us in a position of slavery and of servitude. And so, as a result, this self-hatred, it really gets in the way. jealousy, it really gets in the way of us working to collectively and organizing, you know, because we that creates doubt and that creates mistrust, and we're questioning each other, we're suspicious of each other, and, you know, it can be a impediment to organizing successfully. And then also I'll add that many of us are okay with just being okay and not striving for excellence. Some of us will get to okay and that'll be it. And an example I'll use are some businesses that we get into, you know, whether it's a retail business, an online business, a brick and mortar business. And some of us don't strive for excellence. We settle at okay, and we just want everybody else to be okay with us being just at okay, you know? And we have had a depressed ambition. And so sometimes for many of us, there's only so far that we're willing to go. Is it because we're afraid of failure? Is it because we don't see excellence for ourselves? I don't know. You know, email me, let me know what you think. But there is something, there's some kind of block that we have where, you know, it could be a restaurant, you know, and the food starts out wonderfully, but then all of a sudden it kind of fades, or the floor isn't swept, or the floor isn't mopped, and we just are okay with just being okay, and we want our customer base to be okay with us being okay, you know. And so that idea of just being okay and not wanting to be excellent, it can get in the way of our progress, of our own personal individual goals and dreams and endeavors, but definitely it can get in the way of our collective endeavors, especially when we're organizing. So the other thing is, in this experience that we've had in this country, we do not want unity with each other bad enough. And, you know, I think about how we've historically have marched. We've, you know, sat in, had sit-ins. We've done freedom rides. Our Congressman John Lewis just passed away, and he talked about getting a concussion and being beat terribly, you know, trying to cross the Edmund Pettus Bridge and the traumatic experience of that, so that we can engage in something as fundamental as choice, which I'm talking about voting. So we have done so much. We have sacrificed so much. We have endured so much so that white people would accept us and be in unity with us, so that they would accept us into their society, accept us into their restaurants, accept us sitting next to them in the front of the bus. We have endured so much fighting for unity so that we can be equal with them in this country. But I don't see that we have that same energy and fervor with our own unity amongst each other. And because we don't want unity bad enough with each other, when it comes to organizing, we don't have the endurance. We don't have the love. We don't have the commitment that is required to be organized successfully. And so that is why, if you are going to be someone that leads an organization with Black people, then you must know this. You must know this about our people. You must know this about our history. Because if you don't have an understanding of this, the frustration can burn you out. So if you're the one that's in leadership, or if you are the body, the organizing body of an organization, you must know this. So what do you need to do? You need to keep your eye on the big picture. You have to recognize and appreciate that we have some challenges, that we have some handicaps. That way we can be peaceful and give each other grace and not be so critical of each other. Not just the members being critical of the leaders, but also the leaders being critical of the members. If the members are short-sighted, if the members are non-committal, if the members are inexperienced, if the members are ignorant and they don't have knowledge, then we can't be overly critical of them. We're the ones in leadership, and we have to endure that and bring them to, if someone's ignorant, for example, we have to bring them to the point of knowledge. We have to share information with them. We have to give the members opportunities so that they can learn, so that they can participate. Now, if they choose not to learn, if they choose not to participate, well, then you've done your part by opening up opportunities for your members, and that's great. You know, but we can't force anybody to participate. Maybe somebody likes being noncommittal, right? Maybe somebody likes being a big talker but a little doer. Hey, and that's fine. But as a leader, we have to create opportunities for the members to roll their sleeves up and get involved while still guiding the organization and protecting the organization. So keeping an eye on the bigger picture, also, you know, knowing what small targets that need to be hit so that we can achieve the eventual big goal, because we have to be able to mark progress. You know, when you see progress, when members see progress, progress makes a lot of people feel better. It makes us feel better about where we started. It can breed confidence in the membership. It can breed confidence for the leadership. So being able to chart and track progress is important. And you have to do that by knowing those small targets to hit. Also, we have to recognize that we, as Black people, can work very, very hard against something that we say that we want. And, you know, I don't think I have to give you too many examples about this, but how many times have you been in a community meeting, or have you listened to folks who are activists on television or on the radio, and they're talking about what we need to do, but they're not doing it themselves? Or they're creating the conditions where it's hard to do it for themselves or for anybody else to do it. So we will work hard against what we say that we need. Part of our condition, part of our conditioning. And we have to recognize that. Because the thing is, they won't recognize it themselves. They will not see it themselves. But we have to see it, and we have to recognize it, because we have to maneuver the ship around those icebergs that pop up in organizations. So it's not intentional. It is not intentional. Some people just have a limited perspective on what we can produce together. Because again, we have been guided and given our aims and our purpose by our former slave master. Now here we are, Black people, deciding what we want to do, or what we need to do, or what's good for us. And look, you know, we could be talking about a union. We could be talking about a civic organization. We could be talking about a family reunion, for that matter. How many times have you got a headache trying to just organize a family reunion that's just for 3 days? You know, would you commit? Would you make a decision? It can be difficult with our people. So, you know, we are not that experienced in starting something and seeing it through to the end. And that, too, you know, is a barrier that we have to work around. And we have to know that we often default to self-sabotage and self-destructive behavior. So we have to prepare for that. And we have to be able to observe those that we're leading, of those who are in membership with us, for those. And we have to, you know, monitor ourselves as well. You know, when we start sliding or backsliding, or, you know, when our contributions aren't what they used to be, when our efforts aren't what they used to be, when our fire, our drive isn't what it used to be. And, you know, we are a very self-destructive people, and we are very self-sabotaging people. So we have to take measures so that we can guard against this. And I'll say that it's very, very helpful for organizing bodies or those in leadership to have peers who are also in leadership, to have peers who are also in organizations that are working to do something progressive, so that you can not just vent about what may or may not be happening, but so that you can have someone else to feed off of, so that you can have the energy and the confidence and keep that love to endure and serve the organization, to serve the people. Because I get it. You know, even knowing the psychology of our people, it can be frustrating and it can be disappointing. But we have to take those measures actively to prevent burnout. And I challenge you to endure. You know, it takes great effort. It takes great effort to organize with our people. But if you want to be in leadership, this is what you need to know about our people. The very people that you are serving, the very people that you are sacrificing for, may be the same people that eat your back out, that gossip about you, that are ungrateful. But that's the price of leadership, you know, and that's what we have to know about leadership. You know, leadership isn't just someone in front of the cameras, you know, looking good, or someone in front of the microphone, or someone that stands in front of the people. That's just a part of leadership. But there's hard work. There's hard, tough work that goes into it that many people do not know or don't want to see and often don't talk about. And, you know, and being a servant of our people is a beautiful thing. It is a necessary thing. And it is a thing that is that has to be done with love, and it has to be done with understanding, so that we can improve the outcomes, whatever it is. Understanding that we have to be strategic, understanding that we have to prepare for when self-hatred pops up. You know, you don't want to be ignorant jumping into a leadership position, because you won't be good for yourself or anybody else. So we must know this. So if you want to lead Black people, if you want to organize with Black people, this is just some of what you should know. And I'll end with by saying, if you don't love our people, if you don't love Black people, don't lead them. You can't lead them. You won't be effective. If you're not going to lead with love, don't lead at all. Don't do it. Don't do it to them, and don't do it to yourself. I want to thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Nora Speaks podcast. I'd be interested in your thoughts, your feedback. What have you seen as a member of an organization? What have you seen as being part of the organizing body of an organization? And I look forward to hearing your comments. You can email me at info@norispeaks.com. Again, that's info@norispeaks.com. Thank you for joining me in episode 130. I look forward to being back with you next week. Until then, stay in peace. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Nora Speaks podcast. Be on the lookout for a new episode coming at you fresh next week. And as always, if you want to learn more about me and the work that I do, visit my website, noramohammed.com. Or if you have a listener question, email me at info@norispeaks.com. You can also follow the Nora Speaks podcast on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Nora Speaks Podcast. I'll be sure to include links in the show notes. If this show has value to you, please subscribe, rate, and review, and share it with family and friends. And be sure to check out previous episodes. And remember, don't just join the movement, be the movement. Stay in peace.